Rebecca sat with the other wives in the cloister of the inner courtyard of the palace of Osman Atalan. It was the cool of the evening, and Osman was demonstrating to his followers the courage of his blue-eyed son. For many months, Rebecca had known that her son faced this ordeal. She covered her face with her veil so that none of the other women would know of her fear. Only 3 months previously, Ahmed Habib Abd Atalan had been circumcised. Rebecca had wept as she dressed his mutilated penis. But Nazira had rebuked her. "Ahmed is a man now. Be proud of him, Al-Yamal. Your tears will unman him." Now Ahmed stood before his father, trying to be brave. His head was bare and his fists were clenched at his side. "Open your eyes, my son," Osman's voice crackled. He tossed his sword into the air and it spun like a cartwheel before the hilt dropped back into his hand. "Open your eyes. I want Allah and all the world to know that you are a man. I want you to show me, your father, your courage." Ahmed opened his eyes. They were no longer milky, but a dark blue, like the African sky when storm clouds gather. His lower lip quivered, and tiny droplets of perspiration dewed the upper. Osman flourished the long blade and cut at the side of his head with such force that the steel hummed in the air. The stroke could have bisected a grown man at the trunk. It swept past Ahmed's temple. His unruly coppery hair fluttered in the wind of its passage. The watching Agajirs growled with admiration. Ahmed swayed on his feet. "You are my son," Osman whispered. "Hold fast." He stroked the tip of his son's ear with the flat of the blade. Ahmed shrank away from the cool touch of steel. "Do not move," Osman warned him, "or I will cut it off." Ahmed leant forward and vomited on the ground at his feet. An expression of contempt and shame crossed Osman's face and was smoothed away immediately. "Go back to your mother," he said softly. Ahmed tried to choke back his sobs. "I do not feel well," he murmured hopelessly and wiped his mouth on the back of his hand. Osman stepped back and glared at him. "Go and sit with the women," he ordered. Ahmed ran to his mother and buried his face in Rebecca's skirt. A tense silence held the watchers. Nobody spoke and nobody moved. They were barely able to draw breath. Osman was turning away when a small, delicate figure rose to her feet from among the ranks of seated women. Rebecca tried to hold her back, but Karuba pushed away her hand and went to her father. He grounded the point of his blade and watched her stop in front of him. He studied her face, then demanded ominously, "What disrespect is this? Why do you pester me so?"
"My father, I want to show you and Allah my courage," said the child.
She removed her headcloth and shook out her tawny hair. "Go back to your mother. This is no childish game."
"Exalted father, I do not wish to play games."
She looked straight into his eyes. He raised the sword and stepped towards her, like a leopard stalking a gazelle. She stood her ground. Suddenly he cut, four-handed, at her face. The blade flashed inches from her eyes. She blinked, but stood like a statue. He cut again, backhanded. A curl dropped from the loose mop of her hair and floated to the ground at her bare feet. Behind her, Rebecca cried out,
"Oh, my darling!"
Karuba ignored her and held her father's eyes steadfastly.
"You provoke me," he said, and slowly traced the outline of her body with the blade.
Never further than a finger's breadth from her flesh, the scalpel's sharp edge moved up from the outside of one knee over her thigh, round the curve of her hip, along her arm and shoulder, to the side of her neck. He touched her, and she closed her eyes, then opened them as she felt the steel on her cheek. It moved up over the top of her head and down again to her other knee. She did not flinch. Osman narrowed his eyes and brought the blade back along the same route, but faster, and then again, even faster. The steel dissolved into a silver blur. It danced in front of the child's eyes, like a dragonfly. It hummed and whispered in her ears as it passed close to her tender skin. Rebecca was weeping silently, and Nazira held her hand hard,
but she too was close to tears. "Do not make a sound," she whispered. "If Karuba moves, she is dead."
The dancing blade held Karuba in a cage of light. Then abruptly it stopped, pointing at her right eye from the distance of an inch. The point advanced slowly until it touched her lower lashes. The child blinked but did not pull away.
"Enough," said Osman, and stepped back.
He threw the sword to Al-Nur, who snatched it out of the air. Then Osman stooped and picked up his daughter. He held her close to his chest and looked around at their taut expressions.
"In this one, at least, my blood has bred true," he told them.
Then he tossed her high in the air, caught her as she fell back, and carried her to Rebecca.
"Breed me another like this one," he ordered. "But, wife, this time, make certain it is a boy."
Later that evening, Rebecca lay sprawled on his angareb. She still felt devastated by the events of the day and by the controlled fury of his lovemaking, which had ended only minutes before. She had watched her daughter come close to death under the dancing silver blade, while she herself seemed to have come even closer. She was stark naked, a vessel overflowing with his fresh seed, aching pleasurably where he had been deep inside her. The lovemaking had rendered her charum, unclean in the eyes of God. She should cover herself or go immediately to bathe and cleanse her body, but she felt languorous and wanton. She opened her eyes and found that he had come back from the bedroom window and was standing over her. He was still half erect, his glands glistening with the juices of her body. As she studied him, she felt herself becoming aroused once more. She knew, with sure feminine instinct, that he had just impregnated her again, and that she would be forced to many months of abstinence until she was delivered of the infant. She wanted him, but saw that now his seed was spent, his restless mind had moved on to other concerns.
"There is aught that troubles you, my husband?" She sat up and covered herself with the light bedcloth.
"We spoke once of the steamer that runs on land, that travels on ribbons of steel," he said.
"I recall that, my lord, but it was many years ago."
"I wish to discuss this machine again. What was the name you gave it?"
"Railway engine," she enunciated slowly and clearly. He imitated her, but he lisped and garbled the sounds. He saw in her eyes that he had not succeeded.
"It is too difficult, this language of yours."
He shook his head angrily, hating to fail in anything he attempted. "I shall call it the land steamer."
"I shall understand what you mean. It is a better name than mine, more powerful and descriptive." At times he was like a small boy and must be jollied along. "How many men can travel upon this machine? 10, 20? Surely not 50, he asked hopefully.
"If the land over which it passes is levelled, it can carry many hundreds of men, perhaps as many as 1,000, perhaps many thousands."
Osman looked alarmed.
"How far can this thing travel?"
"To the end of its lines."
"But surely it cannot cross a great river like the Atbara. It must stop there."
"It can, my lord."
"Oh, I do not believe it. The Atbara is deep and wide. How is that possible?"
"They have men they called engineers who have the skills to build a bridge over it."
"The Atbara?
They cannot build over a river so wide."
He was trying desperately to convince himself.
"Where will they find tree trunks long and strong enough to span the Atbara?"
"They will make the bridge of steel, like the rails it runs upon, like the blade of your sword," Rebecca explained.
"But why do you ask these questions, my husband?"
"My spies in the north have sent a message that these God-cursed Englishmen have begun to lay these steel ribbons from Wadi Halfa south across the great bight of the river towards Metemma and the Atbara."
Then suddenly his temper flared.
"They are devils, these infidel tribesmen of yours," he shouted.
"They are no longer my tribesmen, exalted husband. Now I am of your tribe and no other." His anger subsided as suddenly as it had arisen. "I am leaving at dawn tomorrow to go to the north and see this monstrosity with my own eyes," he told her. She dropped her eyes sadly. She would be alone again. Without him, she was incomplete.